Hey there, Santa Fe, 8:33 a.m. here on Thursday, the 16th of January, and joining me through the advanced technology known as the telephone, Fred Nathan, Executive Director of Think New Mexico. Hey, Fred.
Hi, Julia. Nice to be with you.
It's nice to be with you telephonically. I'm going to get you in this office here in the spleen of Santa Fe one of these days, though.
One of these days.
Yes. Think New Mexico, of course, during every session kind of puts its energy, sometimes more than once, into kind of big reform packages. And it's turned its sights now onto several pieces of legislation that make up a package for job creation. Can we start by looking at some of the background information that's prompting this? I know Think New Mexico has been doing some number crunching about the number of jobs lost over the last several years.
Correct. Since 2008, we have lost, I think, 43,000 jobs, Julia, in New Mexico, and about 3,000 private sector businesses. Our job growth right now is 0.2. Every state in our region is either 2% or higher, so 10 times higher, frankly. And when you look at the unemployment rate, it's always said in the media that it's just, you know, like 6 or 7%. It's actually, in New Mexico, 14.7% when you include those people who are underemployed, meaning they are looking for full-time work but only have part-time work, or they've given up altogether. And that's about 137,000 New Mexicans, which is enough to fill the pit seven times over.
And are those job losses Are they dispersed somewhat equally, or are we looking at big job losses in the big cities, Albuquerque?
Yeah, Albuquerque has had more than their share, but I think it's pretty widely distributed all across the state. I don't think there's any of the 33 counties that have escaped job losses during the last 5 years.
So before we look at Think New Mexico's proposed responses to, and you're calling it a crisis, what are you identifying as the factors for New Mexico's very high rates in this area?
I think, you know, a big part of it, and this is sort of a double-edged sword, is that we've become overly dependent on federal jobs. And, of course, that's always been a good thing, and it's been something of a safety net. But in the last recession, because of sequestration and some other things, that just made things worse. And if you look at the numbers, you know, we have some pretty unique challenges in New Mexico, and one of them is that depending on how you calculate it, Julia, about a quarter to a third of our jobs are government-related, and that's about the second highest rate in the country. So obviously we need to do a better job of building out the private sector and sort of diversifying our economy.
And so the three pieces of legislation have been pre-filed, and these are the bills that sort of make up the package of Think New Mexico's reform. Maybe we can go through them
Sure. One
by one. Senate Bill 8, co-sponsored by State Senator Gay Kernan, a Republican out of Hobbs. And I notice that these are bills, I think all the bills are being sponsored by Republicans, so it looks like you're definitely trying to get these past the governor.
Well, no, actually, the lead sponsor is the president of the Senate, Mary Kay Papin,
who's
a Democrat, and we've paired her with Republicans. So, for example, this is an education bill, and Gay Kernan is the ranking Republican on the Senate Education Committee. Well, all our bills, whenever we have a package like this, they're always bipartisan. And so this Senate Bill 8 is designed really to spur entrepreneurship. And so we got very interested in what are the demographics, who's likely to become an entrepreneur. And one group is fairly obvious, people in the STEM field, science, technology, engineering, and math. The other group is something that might surprise some people, which is immigrants. Immigrants are unusually accustomed to taking risk. In many cases, they took a lot of risk to get here. In many cases, they can't find jobs for a variety of reasons, so they're more likely to create their own businesses. And if you look at the Fortune 500, about 40% of those companies were either started by the children of immigrants, think Walt Disney, for example, mm-hmm. or immigrants themselves. Intel, which is responsible for half of our exports in New Mexico, just from one factory in Rio Rancho, was founded in part by Andy Grove, who was born in Hungary, Google is another great example. Sergey Brin was born in Russia. So we thought, what if we merged these two groups? You know, then we could maybe get, you know, entrepreneurs on steroids, where you'd get both groups together. And that took us to looking at our public research universities. And we found that there are, first of all, very few international students, and the few that we have aren't really in the STEM fields. So what this bill is proposing is offering in-state tuition to international students who commit to studying in the STEM fields of science, technology, engineering, and math. And a great example of this is an entrepreneur down in Albuquerque named Andy Lim, who came here from Taiwan about 10 years ago when there was a horrible earthquake there. Mm. And he came here, he came actually to Albuquerque because of serendipity. He knew someone at Albuquerque, and he's a very smart guy, and spoke four languages but didn't speak English. Mm. So to learn English, he decided to get a second bachelor's degree, this time from UNM, and classic immigrant story, worked full-time at a call center while he was going to UNM, and he graduated in 4 years, which hardly anybody does anymore, and started a little web design company. And about 3 years ago, one of his biggest clients, Sushi King, which is a restaurant in Albuquerque, came to him and said, you know, Andy, you're so smart, and you've done such a great job with our website. Do you think you could help us create point-of-sale software, which your listeners may, you have probably been in restaurants, and they don't probably know the term point-of-sale software, but that's when your waiter or waitress comes to the table with an iPad or an iPhone, takes your order, and it goes immediately back to the kitchen where they have an iPad, and it's very efficient, and it helps restaurants to turn tables more quickly and become more profitable. Anyway, Sushi King loved the product that he came up with, and he thought, well, maybe I can start a business out of that. And fast forward to today, and he is literally, from Albuquerque, New Mexico, revolutionizing the restaurant industry. His product is in over 3,000 restaurants in 82 countries. And most importantly, he's hired 37 New Mexicans in high-paying jobs from the STEM fields. And the reason I'm giving you this long digression, Julia, is this is a perfect example of what we need to do. But remember, Andy came here because of serendipity. He knew someone here. We want to get people here more intentionally. And right now, one of the reasons we don't have a lot of international students in the STEM fields is because we're charging them out-of-state tuition, which is one of the highest in the country, whereas our in-state tuition is very, very, it's bargain, and it's very competitive. And North Dakota has done something similar to this. They were actually featured a year ago in the Wall Street Journal, an experiment that they started about 10 years ago. They had problems with out-migration. They were losing population, and their state really wasn't even sustainable. So they decided to offer in-state tuition to anyone who met their academic requirements. And 10 years later, the Wall Street Journal wrote sort of a snarky article about North Dakota, sort of making fun of them being flat and cold, and said, isn't it remarkable that all these out-of-state students and international students have remained in North Dakota after they got in-state tuition and they're starting businesses. So naturally, we looked at that and thought, well, our quality of life here is so much better than it is in North Dakota. If we did the same thing, maybe we could get some more entrepreneurs here. And so anyway, that's a long-winded description of Senate Bill 8.
Okay, great. And then Senate Bill 9 sort of continues on, I think, New Mexico trend of trying to consolidate some of the business people have to do with the state.
Correct. This builds on, you're exactly right, Julia, a reform that we were able to get through with the help of many of your listeners, which is to consolidate the corporate reporting unit that was at the PRC that had an 89-day backlog and was overstaffed and really not performing, with the Secretary of State's office, which has an office of business registrations. And it's been very successful. They've cut that backlog down from 89 days to 3. But businesses in New Mexico still need to file not only with the Secretary of State's office, but a number of state agencies. And many times it's the same information that these agencies are asking for. And a lot of small businesses, we were talking to Stuart Rose, who runs a business center in Albuquerque for healthcare startups. He loves this idea because he says many of these small businesses and entrepreneurs don't have the time to try to navigate all these different websites and filing requirements. So they'll give a law firm $10,000 and say, just sign us up for everything that we need to be signed up for. Mm. And that's sort of tragic because these businesses are capital starved as it is. So what Senate Bill 9 does is creates a one-stop business portal where businesses can do all their registrations, licensing, permitting, paying fees, you know, everything that's required to operate in New Mexico. And this really isn't a new idea. 18 states are already doing this. Delaware is a great example. They have a nearly 90% satisfaction rate for their online portal, and they found that it's improved processing times by 300%.
Wow.
So this bill is also carried by Mary Kay Pape in the Senate, President, with Sam DeRue, who's sort of the online portal king. He passed several years ago, incredibly, a online portal that gives just ordinary citizens access to all kinds of data about state government, including what every state employee is paid and those sorts of things, and contracts, and that's been a success. So we're delighted to have him carrying this along with Senator Papin.
And last but not least, there is a legislation that would give businesses a rebate of up to 30% of the new tax revenue they produce when they relocate or expand operations here, but only after new jobs and new state revenues are created.
That's exactly right, Julia. And this is patterned after something that Utah passed over 5 years ago that's been enormously successful. And the concept really is quite simple, which is the way most states, including New Mexico, do economic development is, in many cases, not all, they offer incentives on the front end before any jobs are created and then cross their collective fingers and hope that these businesses do what they say they'll do. Utah got rid of all their incentives, pre-performance and so forth, and just focus on this. So from a policy wonk standpoint, their data is very good because there's nothing else that can be attributed to their job growth. And they've created over 25,000 jobs in just over 5 years, $5.1 billion of new capital investment in their state, and perhaps of greatest significance to the legislature, $1.6 billion in new state revenues. And these aren't just sort of ordinary jobs. These are from companies like Oracle and eBay and Procter & Gamble and Boeing. They have to be in urban areas. At least 125% of the county wage average, and in rural areas, 100%. And it's interesting, you know, when we found out about this, we called up to Utah and talked to lots of people, businesses that have benefited from this, state government that administers it, and got a lot of information about it. And the people in state government, I think because we're a think tank, thought that we just had this sort of academic interest in it. And when they discovered that, no, actually, we want to replicate this in New Mexico, they've stopped returning our phone calls and our emails. But I think the reason they've been so successful is that business people, you know, like to compete. And the more successful they are, the greater the rebates that they receive back. Taxpayers, of course, like it because there aren't these projects that go bust that waste taxpayer dollars. And so what they do in Utah is they rebate up to 30% of a company's corporate income tax, withholding tax, and sales tax based on whether they create jobs. And it's completely based on performance. Another way to do it is based on capital investment, because some of these businesses don't create a lot of jobs, but they do invest a lot in land and infrastructure. So we think this is something that could be very successful here, and we're excited about it. That bill, I should also add, also gets rid of some tax loopholes that were created many years ago in the name of job creation, but really haven't performed. In fact, we had an intern count up all the exemptions in our gross receipts tax code, and it's like something like 383. And I won't go through all of them, but one that might be of interest to your listeners, and one that we're going to close, is a volume discount on the taxes that tobacco distributors pay in our state. It turns out that most of our tobacco distributors are out-of-state corporations. I believe it's something like 29 out of 36. And this is a tax break that goes back to 1943, so it's been around for about seven decades. And it's the only example, Julia, that we can find in the tax code where a tax entity or a tax filer gets a discount on the taxes they pay. And we think that the original, I found out about this because I used to work for Tom Udall when he was the Attorney General, and we sued the tobacco companies. And their defense was, one of their defenses was, well, the state's in the business with us. And we said, come on, you know, where are you getting this? And they pointed out this provision and pointed out it is the only example where a tax filer gets a volume discount. It dates back to when cigarettes were taxed with stamps that were affixed to each package by hand. Now, of course, that's been mechanized. So we want to eliminate that repeal. They're about the last industry that should be getting a tax break. And they're not creating jobs, but they are harming New Mexicans. So that's part of the bill as well.
Well, and Fred, before we run out of time, real quick, as you bring up, you know, and as I'm sure you know, the tax code is very much in the sights of, you know, state lawmakers. Peter Wirth was on the show yesterday discussing it, and the food tax that Think New Mexico was so instrumental in repealing is now sort of coming back in terms of kind of a backlash against the phasing out of the hold harmless provisions, possibility of legislation that would maybe allow municipalities to reinstate on a case-by-case basis the food tax. Where's Think New Mexico on this? Is it you've got it through and now you're kind of hands-off, or are you continuing to be involved in this discussion?
No, we're still very much involved, and we want to stop this potential reimposition of the food tax. And your listeners may recall the tax was repealed in 2004, which we thought was a wonderful thing, and separated New Mexico from the only two states that continue to fully tax food, which are Mississippi and Alabama. But there are, you know, some lobbyists and political insiders that thought that was a mistake. I think they tend to work for industries that were harmed by that. For example, you know, one of the things I point out about the food tax, and if it were reimposed, it would be a transfer of wealth from working low and middle-income New Mexicans to companies like Walmart. Walmart's now the biggest chain grocery store in New Mexico. And you're probably wondering, well, why would that benefit them? And the answer is, when we used to tax food, the grocers were allowed to keep the tax revenue that they collected for up to 56 days in their bank accounts before they transferred it to the state. So they would get a lot of money from the interest on that float. So those folks would be delighted. In fact, the head of the Grocers Association was quoted recently in the Rio Grande Sun as saying they support the reimposition of the food tax. Of course, he denied it had to do with self-interest, but I would beg to differ. Another powerful lobbying group is the convenience stores. And again, another technical thing about the food tax, but the definition of food is tied to the food stamp definition. And that only works for stores that get more than half of their receipts from selling food. So convenience stores are not considered grocery stores, and therefore they continue to tax food, and that puts them at a disadvantage to grocery stores. So they'd also love to see the tax repealed. So we've got our hands full, and I'd encourage your listeners, if they want to get involved, they can go to our website at thinknewmexico.org and type onto the Action Center. And we have prescripted letters that they can send to their legislators asking them not to reimpose the tax on food.
Well, Fred, we appreciate your time today. We're out of it on our end, but I hope we can check in with you again during the session and see how things are going.
Anytime. Okay. Many thanks, Julia.
Thank you.
Okay.
Folks, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we will wrap up the 8 o'clock hour and head on into the 9 o'clock hour here on KVSF 101.5, The Voice of Santa Fe. We're streaming live on santafe.com.